If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, podcasts are an independent publishing company explore the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by a Mr.
Daniel Wilcox.
And then it says here, say hello. Hello!
Hello, say. I feel like it's been ages since we've recorded.
It has. We actually missed last week. We should have had an episode.
No, we didn't.
But, you know, it's been a little bit of a break. You know, we've been refreshing. Getting used to it all, getting used to this writing down 2018 rather than 2017, which I keep doing still.
Yeah, I like the 8 more than the 7, personally. I don't know why, it just feels a lot more full.
Yeah. So how is the old writing going? You got a 5,000 word day done the other day, right?
Yeah, I had a nice little whack at the keys. But yeah, just chipping away at my collaboration with Michael Anderley in one of his universes. Just literally trying to put the words on the page. It's quite nice because I think I mentioned it before, it's been a while since I've kind of first drafted a big project. I think the last one was Lazarus, and the first draft for that we wrote last January, February time.
Yeah.
So just getting that down, falling in love with the characters, getting them a bit more rounded. And it's quite nice because I've had to re-experience that first sort of 5,000 to 10,000 words where it really feels like a slug. Where you're really trying to get to grips with what the world is, who the characters are, what you're trying to get. And I'm now at that point where I feel like I'm getting the rhythm. I know who the characters are. I know what I want to go for. So, yeah, yesterday just put a couple of hours in the morning and managed to pump out, I think it was 5,500 words in 3 hours, which is one of the fastest that I think I've ever done, which I'm happy with.
I've never written that much in one day. I think my PB, personal best, was about 4,500. It was one of our short stories. It was the one we did for the Rot verse.
The Keep My Bones.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's, I don't know if I could do it every day. Maybe if I wasn't working.
I actually found it surprisingly easy. I managed to, every time I put my fingers to the keys, I had that moment of pause where I suddenly went, right, what am I doing? Mm. And then, because I think partly because I've recently read The War of Art and I'm just thinking about just getting the words down. Yeah. That voice in my head just said, write shit. Write your first shit 100 words and then just keep going.
Squeeze it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Just squeeze it until, you know, it dribbles. And yeah. Oh, that's a horrible image. I'm sorry. So I did that. And then also I've been doing a lot of sort of the Pomodoro thing at the minute. So
yeah.
I've been, depending on how I feel my concentration is going, if I feel a bit tired, I'll kind of go for like 15, 20 minutes. If I feel good, I'll go for 30 minutes.
Well, I've found success with the same thing, 25 minutes. I'll find myself like starting to automatically go to Facebook and stuff. So what I've decided to do, I do 10 minute bursts with 1 minute breaks for some reason. It's the quick sort of turnaround time where it's like, I don't know, it's like... 10 minutes and I just feel that's a really good focus.
Do you not then
minutes.
Stop and kind of just look up like a meerkat? Because I've got an app.
Pretty much, yeah.
I've got an app that, I don't know if you've ever played with this. Have you ever played with an app called Tide? as in like waves.
No, I don't think so. I've not heard of it.
It's really good. It's got it's basically essentially a Pomodoro timer for focus, but it's got five different ambient settings. So it's got like morning, forest, muse, afternoon, and cafe.
Yeah.
So I was sat this morning listening to the cafe setting, and as I'm writing, I actually feel like I'm in a cafe. So I feel like the eyes are watching me.
Is that is that like a binaural thing?
Like a little bit, I think. Yeah. But then you just set the time straight away from the thing. Just tap the noises that you want, and it just happens. But that's been really, really helpful for me.
Cool, cool. Is that your big whip, or have you got something else for the big whip?
No, I'm going to see how your writing is first.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, so I finished the first draft of The Ruin. That came in at a lean 60,000 words. It's if you've been reading, if anyone out there has been reading our rock books, this is the most... I say it's incredibly action heavy. I don't think it is incredibly action heavy compared to like other books out there, but for this series, which is all about like slow builds and big payoffs, it is more action. It's more Mad Max than The Road, if that makes sense. Mm. Although The Road's got some pretty violent bits in it. But
yeah,
it's been fun. It's been really good to get that done. Feels good to just tick off a first draft so early in the year. It feels like I've got the momentum going now.
Keep it going. 2018. Yeah. Hit your goals.
Come on.
Come on. Do it. But yeah, I think...
you can do it.
I think I mentioned this to you as well. Like, in terms of story, I think it's due a bit of an action push. For those familiar with the story, the first one, there's a lot of that slow build-up into getting the guy to where he wants to go. And the second one is a bit more exploring the world. And then this third one, it's kind of that urgency of, right, we need to now go and get the thing that he wants. I'm not going to give a lot of spoilers, so that sounds like really generic, but yeah, I think it'll be worth it for anyone that is reading that series. And we have had a few people already asking for book three, which has been quite nice.
Yeah So it'd be good to get that done. So I just quickly do my big whoop before I forget it, because I'm going to forget it. Have you ever heard of a comedian called Eddie Izzard?
Of course I have. He's okay. Huge.
He is, yeah. So Eddie Izzard, he's a transvestite comedian. He is, you know, is an actor. Like, he's been in big Hollywood films and stuff. Like, a few years ago, I think it's 2012, I want to say, he decided that he was going to run 30 marathons, I think it is, in 41 days. And he'd never had any running experience before. If you look at him, he doesn't look like a particularly sort of, you know, healthy, fit person. But it was like a charity thing. He had 5 weeks to train, and he said, okay, I'm going to put the intention out there by, if I make a TV show of it, I'm going to have to follow through with it. So if you go on YouTube, I think there's three episodes, about an hour long each of these. It's called Eddie Izzard Marathon Man. So if you go on YouTube and check them out, they're so inspiring. I watched it because I'd like to run now, and it's something I do. But in terms of writing as well, you kind of see how much of it is just pure grit and just all mindset. Like he says, like he's not particularly healthy. And if you asked me to do a marathon, I just couldn't do a marathon. I know I couldn't. It's just 10 hours of just straight running every day.
And but like, you could. Isn't that the point?
Yeah, I suppose it is, yeah. But just to watch those and just see this really lovely guy sort of just say, I'm going to do this thing, and then go through 40 days of like pain and hardcoreness and then actually come out and do it, like, and do it really well. It's just really inspiring. So I think if you're looking for a big like kick in the ass, I think that is a good way to go.
Another one, I don't know if you've come across him yet, is a guy called David Goggins.
No, I don't think so.
If you look up some of his videos, he did like some TED Talks, and he was also on the Impact Theory podcast. But he's a similar guy in that he's got a bit of a dark background, but he wanted to try and push himself to the limit, and for example did something like 1,647 pull-ups in one go, and just things like that. But it's like a kind of he wanted to prove he can get past his mental block. So the minute that he thinks that he can't do anymore, he tells himself that he's 40% of the way there,
yeah,
and tries to give himself that extra push. But yeah, I think he's like a SEAL or something, like Marini, that he's just that toughness, that mentality. But I think in a lot of cases, it is the mental strength that pulls people through.
It's weird. So he said, at one point, Eddie Izzard said, how do I get through today's marathon is by knowing, because what they did is the marathon every day for 6 days, and he had a rest day. What he'd do, he'd say, so let's say he was on the first marathon, he'd be halfway through the marathon, he'd be feeling really bad and good. I just need to get through 5 more marathons and then I've got a break. And it was like just working these mental chunking. Games. Yeah, chunking, yeah. Even though like a marathon in itself is insane, like he was able to chunk it to the point where it was manageable.
You got to think though, if you're doing, how many marathons was it, 30?
I think it was 30 in 40 days.
Yeah. If you're doing 30 marathons, yeah, one marathon probably doesn't seem that big if you know that you've got another 29 ahead of you.
And you know they've got like a TV crew following you and everyone's taken off like 40 days work time to do it. Yeah, there's one point where he said, I can't. I think he was like, literally like his like legs are swelling up and stuff. And he was like, I just can't stop because you're here, because it's on the TV. Mm. And like, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how you do that.
There's just a TV crew behind us when we're writing.
Yeah, but you need to have like, I still think some people will crumble. I think some people would just like crumble under the pressure. Yeah, yeah. But it's good. It's all about mindset, and I really enjoyed it. So that's my big whip. Yeah. Have you thought of one yet?
I'm gonna just for the sake of time, because we'll be speaking to Zach very very soon, Zach Rohannon. But I'm gonna do my big whip as a little bit of a plug, but also for those who want to join us over on the Hawk and Cleaver Facebook group. We've just finished our first reading, our first month of our readers club, which was Joe Hill's Strange Weather. Which, how did you find it, Luke?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's Joe Hill annoys me in a way, because you kind of want him to be a bit shit, because you want his success you want his success to be like, oh, because it's Stephen Kingston. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But then you read it and you're like, oh fuck it, he's actually really good. In fact, he's apparently quite big, but his writing is really good. Like he's very good at coming up with very unique, they're sort of like magic realist horror stories. So if anyone's read Lock and Key or read Horns or any of those stories, you know what I mean. But he's very good at coming up with these kind of strange concepts. And there's one story in there that didn't use that sort of storytelling genre that I found so out of place and enthralled by it. And I just,
which really one was that? Lost?
Loaded. I just found.
Okay.
It wasn't that sort of same style, but I think it was just the breath of fresh air. It was the exact kind of story I really wanted to read at the time. Just like no fantasy elements, just give me some hardcore violence.
It was good. I think he tied the story well as well, and showed that without giving too much spoilers for those who haven't read it yet. But I like what he did with the whole misconstruing your perception.
Yeah.
So the part where, as a woman came up, he saw a bomb, as opposed to what was actually in the end. That whole kind of, it's that distortion of your point of view. And I thought he did that really, really well, because you kind of then have to read more into it. But yeah, there were a few in there that, two in there that I absolutely loved, which was Snapshot and Aloft. Aloft sticks with me the most because it was the most unique, which for those who haven't read it, it's basically a guy doesn't want to skydive, but he's up there because he's in love with a girl, and then he lands on what is essentially a cloud, but not a cloud, that starts to almost bow to his every wish, but there's something that's kind of going on underneath the cloud itself. But that was, I felt like that was so different. Yeah. And the way that he wrote it was very dreamlike.
Yeah, I liked the whole character development and the sort of the metaphors that he used of the character's fears and controlling needs in the cloud. Yeah, it was good. I really liked it.
Yeah, so I'm thinking we might, we've not really spoken about this, but we might do a bonus episode of just actually discussing the Strange Weather a bit more, potentially bring on John and have a bit of a chat.
Yeah.
But yeah, for those of you that are interested in joining us in our next read, we've currently got a couple of options up on the Facebook group for our February book. Have you got the list there, Luke?
Yeah, so Little Heaven by Nick Cutter is currently leading the pack. Which I don't mind. I like Nick Cutter quite a lot. Head for the Ghost by Paul Tremblay, Bird Box by Josh Malerman, Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman, Kin by Keila Patrick Burke, a former guest of ours, The Girl Next Door by Jack Ketchum, as he passed away the other day, and Seed by Anya Olborn.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah. So yeah. So
jump on in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Okay, I think that's all the intro gubbins we've set the stage. enough. I hope you're all ready. Hope you're feeling it. Ready for the interview.
Ready for Zach. Zach Bohannon is a father, a husband, a top 100 horror author. He writes post-apocalyptic science fiction, horror and fantasy. He's the author of the best-selling zombie series, Empty Bodies, as well as the best-selling post-apocalyptic horror series, Final Awakening. He's also the co-owner of Multi-Universe Media. Zach lives in Tennessee with his wife, daughter and German Shepherd. Among writing and being an avid reader, he loves to watch and play hockey and to listen to heavy metal. He spent his 20s playing drums in metal bands, and he had a beard way before it was cool, around 2007. Well,
hey, Zach.
I love the way you guys say heavy metal over there. It's awesome.
We pronounce the words.
Absolutely. I love it. So, now, how are you guys doing, man? It's good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
Do you know, I like the way that Americans pronounce horror.
Oh, yeah, because it sounds very whorish.
Horror.
Yeah. Horror. Yeah, I'm terrible. I can barely say it. So,
yeah.
Zach, so just firstly, so how long have you had the beard?
I think it feels like it's longer than 2007. I don't know. Like, it sounded like that came up in the bio, but since like my senior year in high school, so 2003.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, so like, I used to have a beard, and then I felt like it became a very kind of hipstery thing to have a beard. So I was like,
it is now. So, yeah.
I don't want people like thinking of me that way. Like, do you have any sort of like grooming regime? Do you have oils and a comb?
No, I don't do all that stuff.
Au naturel.
Yeah, it's just there, man. So
see, I'm just jealous of anyone that can grow a beard. I've had the little sort of gingery puby thing on my chin for a good 8-9 years, but kind of try and go for the beard and it just comes out like a ginger sheep.
You've got like a I reckon you'd see a soul patch then. Like a proper
kind of sorta, yeah.
Yeah,
I could probably give that a go, see how that works out, and then post up a picture and report back to you guys in a few months.
Yeah, man. But this is that your picture on your Amazon author profile. You look so metal in that picture, dude. Like, that is that a band picture? Did you sort of go for like a band, you know? You look like a guy from Crowbar. What was his name again?
Like Kirk Weinstein.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
It's funny. Like, I you said in my bio, I played metal bands for so long. I don't really know how to take a picture another way. So the funny thing about that picture, I'll tell you what's really funny, is that I took it myself. And like, so I have the camera on a stand and I have like a little Bluetooth photo thing. And it's like in my hand where my arms are crossed. So it's kind of like I'm sitting there out in my backyard by myself looking all tough taking this picture. So
I do feel like if I don't buy your book, you might hunt me down and kill me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm really like a really nice guy, but I think I am at least, and it's funny when I get those kind of reactions. I'm just like so it's kind of fun to have those pictures up for that reason, you know.
You know what they say, that people like horror writers and people who write darker stuff tend to be extremely nice, like Jack Ketchum, who died, you know, rest in peace the other day. He was meant to be one of like the sweetest guys to talk to, but that's one of the darkest fiction I think like ever.
Yeah, it was Jay Thorne and I were actually talking about him a little bit on our podcast yesterday because we got the news right before we started recording. And from everything I understand, he's a really, he was a really sweet guy. But I mean, I'll go ahead and stand pat and say that, and I blogged about this a few years ago, but like The Girl Next Door is like by far the scariest horror book I've ever read. Because it could actually happen and probably has happened. It kind of sucks he's gone, but you know, that's life, you know, it happens, gonna happen to all of us. So
yeah, and he's left a nice legacy of work that we can all jump into now. And
absolutely,
yeah man. So I mean, last time we spoke was a couple of years ago. You were on a podcast I was doing at the time, and I think at the time you were writing the Empty Bodies series as well, mm-hmm. as doing like standalone novels, and at the same time you were like running a warehouse or something.
And
you've done like you're doing all this stuff at the same time. And like since then, you've done so much. But I mean, the biggest thing is you've gone full time with the author career now. I mean, how's that change been for you?
It's been awesome. So it's, I guess it happened in April of 2017 and it's January. So whatever that math equals to, that's how long, almost coming up on a year in a couple months. So But yeah, you know, at my job, I'd kind of reached my peak. Like there was really nowhere else for me to move up. And, it was at a point where it was just, you know, I didn't, my heart wasn't in that job anymore. And my wife and I had kind of, you know, put ourselves in position where I could jump and make that move. And my book sales were doing well enough. And, you know, so I was able to do that. And it's been awesome. I mean, I'll say that it's not what people, I think for me, at least, I don't think it's definitely different than I thought it was going to be. I don't necessarily feel like I write a whole lot more than I did when I was full time. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, before it was like, okay, I have to get up in the morning and I have to get this done before I go to my job. And now it's like, and I've realized, like, it's not that I'm being lazy by any means, because I get up and I get in the chair and I work, but I think I realized that the amount of words I was writing when I was in my day job is not much less than my threshold I can do in a day anyway.
Yeah.
So it's been, but luckily I have a lot of other projects going on, that are keeping me busy. But yeah, it's been great, man. I mean, the best thing has definitely been, it's definitely made my wife and I stronger, like more closer.
Yeah.
Cause our work schedules had lined up before where we didn't really get to spend a whole lot of time together and with our daughter all at the same time. And now, she has a couple of days off during the week and we're able to schedule things a little more and all that. So it's been good. So it's been awesome for that. And, been an interesting change to say the least.
See, I'm curious, how have you found it in terms of social life? Because I remember that a couple of years back, I was I ran my own business for about a year and a half, 2 years. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I actually went back into work, besides obviously stable income, was the fact that I missed being around people. Do you still find that you're able to keep up a social life? Do you see sort of certain friends more than you did, or how does that work?
No, that's a really good question. No, I mean, that has definitely been a change. It's, you know, my best friend who I've been friends with for well over 10 years. He lives here, but he lives kind of on the other side of town. And, so we don't really get to see each other a bunch. But it definitely has been weird, like not going into a job every day and being around people. And, you know, I had friends at work and I was social and stuff. And, that's definitely been something that's been hard to adjust to. And, my wife has to kind of make me sometimes like, hey, you need to get out of the house and go hang out with some people. But, one way I've kind of combated that is by going and writing in coffee shops and stuff. And, I actually did that this morning. I try to go one or two days a week, and I've really gotten to know the people who work at this one particular coffee shop close to me and stuff. So, I get social interactions that way, which has been really good, but that's definitely a challenge. You know, and for some people, like aforementioned Jay Thorne, my partner, he doesn't care. He'd rather never talk to anybody. So I don't think it's really bothered him since he's gone full time since July, but, it's definitely been weird for me and been an adjustment, but, it's, you know, it's just something I have to deal with, I guess. So
yeah, the positives that way, the negatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What about like local, like writers meetups and that kind of thing? Or is there anything like that going up around there?
There is, but I kind of stay away from it because it's really snooty.
All right.
Yeah.
It's all that tradition of publishing based.
Yeah. It's Nashville, like where I live in Nashville, is very like Tennessee as a whole is a very conservative state, or a Trump state. You guys might know him over there, but Nashville is very liberal and very hipster, especially like East Nashville. So there's some different organizations here and stuff. There's actually one place that has like organized writing classes and stuff. And I've actually tried to get to lead some classes over there and they won't even answer my emails. So I'm like, okay. All right. But then I see other people who are running classes and like they have never even published a book. So I'm just like, okay, that's not. So it's like that kind of stuff. It's real snooty, like.
Yeah.
We don't really believe in, even I can't even get libraries around here to like, let me come and talk. So,
wow.
That's so weird it's, because you are like a full-time author and like there's so many authors who are like, you know, moonlighting. The writing is just like what they do around the teaching of the writing.
Exactly.
And it doesn't really make that much sense, but that doesn't seem right to me. I don't know. Maybe that'll change.
So I've kind of stepped away and, you know, all my author interactions are on Facebook and, you know, with guys like you and, you know, all my friends. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So what does your daily routine look like? Is it, I know obviously it will have changed since you've actually gone full time in the sense that you have more time to play with, but how does that kind of line up in terms of, do you split your, I don't know, writing in the morning and your marketing in the afternoon? Because I know you said that you work on several projects at once. Yeah. So how do you kind of juggle those?
Yeah, I usually try. I usually like to do my writing in the morning. And that usually starts around 7 a.m. I usually will get up and make coffee. And I always set aside half an hour for reading fiction in the morning. So I'll sit in my office and have a cup of coffee and read whatever book I'm reading at the time. And then I'll kind of get going and stuff. And different days are different because there's a couple days during the week where I take my daughter to daycare. So that kind of breaks up my morning a little bit. But there's a couple days where I don't have to, and I can just kind of work through until I'm ready to make breakfast or if I want to go for a walk or go exercise or something. But I usually try to do most of my writing stuff before lunch. So I usually get about 3 or 4 hours in as far as like drafting. And then I'll spend the afternoons doing admin work. And like Jay and I are, you know, we just did our authors on a train trip in November, and we put together a short story anthology for that. So I was doing revisions for that in the afternoon. I've been doing outlining for some projects we're working on. Like I do that marketing, all that kind of stuff I do in the afternoon. I usually work until about 4 o'clock or so. It's usually about when I cut off, sometimes a little closer to 5. But I definitely try to get that writing done in the morning so I can keep other stuff in the afternoon. So
what time are you getting up in the morning? Because I know before, I think you were getting up 5-ish, you know, like kind of crazy early to get the writing. Are you still keeping that sort of discipline on that side of it, or are you a little bit more
I get up around 6 usually.
So still early then.
Yeah, still early. And that's like, it's funny, the first few months I was full time, I didn't even have an alarm set. I just woke up like, cause I was so used to it. And, another thing to remember too, is I do have a toddler. So I have a 3.5-year-old, and she usually leaves her room and comes in our room around that time of the morning too. So that kind of wakes me up.
Yeah.
But I'm usually up around 6 and get the coffee going and then start my reading. And so I can try to get the desk and, you know, start doing other stuff by 7. Like I like to check my email. I'll check in on Slack and see if Jay has sent me anything, because he's an hour ahead of me. So a lot of the time, by the time I wake up, he sent me some messages and stuff already that I need to check. So and do a couple of those things, and then I turn all that off and get into my writing for today or whatever project I'm working on. So
yeah, sounds awesome. So before, when we spoke, you were, you know, you were writing on your own, and since then, you just mentioned Jay then, and you're doing a lot of, sort of collaboration with him. What is that like, the biggest change you made that sort of put you towards this like author full-time lifestyle, or what are the big changes that you've made in your work, and, you know, how have they helped you along?
Yeah, you know, it would be hard for me to sit here and say that was not the biggest change. because it definitely was a big change, and it definitely helped. You know, and you guys could probably attest to this. It's not necessarily that, like, a lot of people think, and maybe it is like this for some people who collaborate, but it's definitely not for Jay and I, but it's not like collaborating makes you put out books faster. At least in our experience, like we're not getting books done quicker just because there's two of us on it, but we both definitely agree that we are putting out much better work together, and we're putting out stuff that we could never do on our own. And another thing, And Jay says this a lot in interviews, and we can't stress this enough, but as far as our collaborative relationship, I think that something a lot of people miss is he and I are, even though he's way older than me, as I like to pick on him about, we're in very, very similar life stages. So, like, you know, we're in similar places in our career as far as like the income and stuff we were making. We both have wives, we both have kids, we both have mortgages. We both left our jobs only a couple months apart. He left his a few months after me. So we were in very, very similar life stages, which gives us, you know, we understand that it's not like one of us has a six-figure royalties rolling in from a book and we don't need it as bad. Like he and I both need to get stuff out and both need to work. So that really pushes both of us to make sure we're getting stuff done. And the other part of that is that, like, our partnership has led to additional income that has really helped us along the way, that has really made this a lot easier of a transition. I mentioned Authors on a Train, that we did. That was a writer's retreat that we did that, you know, that was income that we got that definitely helped out. We have a couple other things like that coming up this next year. And you know, those are things that I would have not done on my own and that he would have not done his own, but because we did them together, or because we're collaborating and because we run this business together, we were able to do these things. And it definitely makes things a lot easier as far as like paying the bills and stuff. So, I mean, it definitely has helped with this transition being in a partnership with him.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have been full-time had you not gone into this partnership?
Yeah, I don't know if it would have happened as immediate as it did. Especially because, I was working towards, getting, you know, going full time for a while. And, really I'd been working towards working for myself since 2012 with, you know, when I was doing a little bit different entrepreneurial, pursuit, but side hustle. But you know, I'd been playing this for a while and my wife and I had been financially setting ourselves up to do this. But, you know, when we went and, the real life-changing moment for me was when we went and we did our trip with Joanna Penn and Lindsay Broker, and we spent a week together in New Orleans writing American Demon Hunter Sacrifice. That was really a turning point for me, and especially the dinner the last night when we'd had a few drinks and Joanna started like basically saying, you need to quit your job when you go home. and when I got home, my wife was like, you know, like you are, she's right. You do need to quit your job. And at that point, Jay and I were really early with what we were doing in Molten Universe Media. And we were just working on our first book together and stuff. So I say all that to say that like, I would have gone full time, but I don't know if I hadn't had Jay there and known that we were going to be working on, like had all the plans we had, I might have waited a little more. And also knowing at the time, you know, I knew that he was leaving his job because he had a contract, so that he knew he wasn't going to renew. So I think that kind of pushed me as well. So yeah, I think I would have eventually, but I don't know if I would have right then and there. So
yeah. So Dan, go on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so me and Dan obviously write books together, you and Jay, and then there's Dave and Sean and Johnny, all these sort of like little writing.
Sean and everyone.
little writing partnerships going on. I think there's a lot of people out there who are probably sitting at home alone thinking, where's my partner? I mean, have you got any sort of any advice to like the people who maybe want to find a writing partner, or you know, what steps can they take to do that?
Yeah, so the first thing, just to kind of reiterate what I said earlier, I think the most important thing is to try to find someone who has a similar life situation to you. which I've already talked about before, so I won't really get into that more. But you know, Jay and I, we also, we have a lot of stuff in common other than books too. You know, we both come from playing in bands. You know, he plays guitar in a heavy metal band. You know, so we're both metalheads. You know, there's we like a lot of the same movies. There's a lot of similarities there, and I know it can be kind of overwhelming for writers to, if they want to collaborate, to find that partner, because, you know, a lot of writers are introverts. They don't really know how to get out and meet people. And I think the most important thing is, don't necessarily be looking for somebody to write with. Like, I think that when that comes, you'll just know. And my best advice, and this isn't just for collaborating, but just for networking in general, is I think that, you know, you should definitely be reading books in your genre. And what I like to do is whenever I read a book in my genre especially by an indie that I enjoy, I reach out to them, and with no expectations, like no expectations that they're going to help me market or that we're going to, none of that stuff. Like, I just reach out to them and say, hey, I enjoyed your book. I give them some, because, you know, we love that as authors, right? We love hearing people tell us our books are good. And I don't even mention that I'm an author other than it's in my signature on my email. And being a fan of people is how I've gotten pretty most of the relationships I have in this. And some people won't email you back at all. Some people will email you back and just say thanks. And then some people will start conversation with you, and it can lead to, you know, just being friends, having someone you can reach out to for author advice, doing cross promotion. Or in Jay and I's case, because I was a fan of his before we became friends, you know, we end up just becoming friends first, and then we end up later on starting a podcast together, and then later on deciding we're going to write together, and then moving that towards starting our own like little publishing company and stuff together. So, but all that came out of me being a fan of his and, you know, reading his stuff first and reaching out to him. So, you know, other than that, you know, writing groups, if you have a local writers group, that's great. You know, Facebook groups are great with authors, especially if you can find some smaller groups, not one of these big groups, like 1,000 people in it.
Yeah.
I think all those things definitely help. And it also helps if you can find someone who has different like strengths that are opposite to yours. So, and for example, in Jay and I's instance, I really, really enjoy first drafting, but I don't really like doing revisions. He loves doing revisions, but doesn't really enjoy first drafting. So, and he's a certified Story Grid editor. If you guys aren't familiar,
certifiable qualification?
Yes, it's a new thing, and he was actually in the first group of people that was given it. There's, I think, 20 different certified Story Grid editors now, and he did like a week of a very, very intense classes to go get that certification with Sean Coyne, who wrote the Story Grid, and Tim Grawl. And so, yeah, he's one of the first. And so having that on my side, because we really believe in the Story Grid, really helps with planning books and with editing and stuff. So, if you can find someone who has opposite strengths, because if you find a partner, if you love first drafting and then your partner loves first drafting, you can definitely make that work. But like, I think that, I personally think it would make it a little more difficult, from everything that we've done with collaborations. So,
yeah.
Do you have a preference, Luke? I forget if you're more of a first draft, right?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't mind editing to a degree. I don't mind doing like a first pass of editing, but after that, it's like I can't look at these words anymore.
Yeah, Jake loves it. Yeah,
these are the same words I saw last time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny when you're in the position of the person who's first drafting, like, you know, you have to be very, very vulnerable and understand that this person is going to see your words that are probably pretty crappy, and it's going to change. And to me, that's okay. Like, I mean, honestly, I trust him so much that we have books that I haven't even seen after I wrote the first draft. Like, I did not even read it when it was done. So that's the kind of trust that he and I have, to where like, I know that he's going to make it really good, and that I don't even have to worry about going back and reading it. I can just start working on the next project. So
sounds pretty efficient.
Yeah.
So yeah, we like to think so.
you've mentioned a couple of times about different podcasts. Obviously, you had the horror writers podcast to begin
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites at the time, Zach.
Yeah,
and then it ended.
That was our old podcast we did. Yep.
Yeah, and you've got something of an avatar on the pedal to the metal to Rachel Herron and Jay.
Which I'm trope listen on to that show.
Take a shot. But yeah, tell us a bit more about your brand new podcast, The Career Author. Tell us a bit more about how that came to be and what you're sort of trying to achieve with it. Because, I mean, it's easy to say there's a lot of nonfiction author type podcasts, but everyone likes to spin their own spin, I like to think. So what is it that makes The Career Author unique?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because, and he won't mind me saying this, but it was like, I'd been wanting to get back into podcasting for a long time. And if people who are listening, if you've heard the name Jay Thorne, there's probably a reason. It's because he has a fifth podcast. So he had continued doing podcasting after, you know, we ended the Horror Hour podcast, but I'd been away from it and I really wanted to get back into it. And I'd been wanting to for a while and I could never sell him on, he didn't want to do a writing podcast for the exact reason, Daniel, that you said, you know, like, because everything's already been said or is being said. Mm. So it was really hard to sell him on that. And to be honest with you, I don't really know what finally got him to do it. I know he'd kind of come to a place with The Intronaut, which was his podcast for introverts, where he'd kind of said all he could say. So I know he was going to drop that podcast. And I brought him the idea and the format for The Career Author. And I had mentioned to him, I said, hey, you know, we really enjoyed doing Authors on a Train and doing those workshops all week. And you know, we have other like speaking events we want to do and different types of really unique writer retreats. And I was like, I think that we should do a podcast where we can, you know, try to build more of that audience and stuff. And, you know, have, so we have an audience to tell those events about so we can get more people to come. And I brought him a really cool format. He came up with some great, great ideas for stuff we're doing with Patreon. Mm. And we've been really blown away by how much people have supported us early on. But a lot of that is a test to him and some of the cool ideas he came up with for stretch goals. And basically what the Career Podcast is, for anyone who hasn't listened yet, we're only, our fourth episode aired today, but it's basically just a 30-minute podcast for authors each week. We do a news segment where we talk about some news going on. And then we have a topic every week where we talk about some different thing that, you know, we hope can give advice and tips to people who are looking into writing and publishing, especially if they're looking to self-publish. And as I mentioned, we're also doing some cool stuff with Patreon where each month we're also recording a bonus episode where we're going to be watching a movie and then breaking down the plot about why the movie works and kind of using the story grid as like a really kind of like loose basis, but not going too deep into that. And so that's a really, like, we just recorded the first one of those yesterday. We did I Am Legend, the Will Smith film.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so that'll be going out to our patrons and stuff next week. So it's just been a lot of fun, man. And it's really cool to be back in podcasting. So,
yeah. So, you're talking about the retreats as well. So the idea is to sort of get, you know, build an audience to get people on those retreats. Those retreats, from what I've seen, the Writing on a Train sounds like something I would personally really want to do.
Are there plans to bring it to the UK?
Yeah, exactly.
hey, that's not an excuse because we had two people from the UK on our last retreat. So really? You guys can come to us. Yeah, we had it was cool, man. We had two people from the UK and we had one woman come from Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
So that was almost half the group was international. So it was really cool.
So this one that you did recently, is this going to be like a standard? So is it from Detroit, Chicago to New Orleans? Is that the route?
No, man, you haven't been to the States because you definitely don't go to Detroit.
I've been to Florida. I've been to Florida, and that's it.
So what it is, we met eight other authors in Chicago.
Right.
And we spent about half a day together in Chicago because the train doesn't take off. It doesn't leave the station until 8:05 at night. So a lot of people started trickling in during the day, and we all met up, and first time everyone had met each other in person. You know, we'd been talking on Slack and stuff for a couple months before, but this is the first time everyone had met each other. And we took an overnight train to New Orleans. Everyone had a bunk buddy they were with. So they really got to know the person they were traveling with. And, so that train trip is, what is it? 18, 19 hours, I think, or something.
Wow.
So we get in about late, a little late in the afternoon on the next day, and
someone's been murdered. It sounds like the plot to like an amazing book or film.
Well, that's actually it's funny because that is it actually is exactly what the plot of American Demon Hunter Sacrifice is that we wrote with Joanna and Lindsay, because we did the same trip. That's how Authors on a Train came about, was because we did the same train trip.
Yeah.
So that book all takes place on the train and demons attacking this train. So, but anyway, so it does make for a good premise for a book.
It was very good. I can attest to that. I've read it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to write. But, but so we get to New Orleans, and then we spent a week together. Every single day we did workshops, or we talked about, you know, Jay and I led these classes and lectures on like publishing and marketing and craft, all kinds of stuff. And then everyone in the group was paired up with another author, and everyone wrote a maximum of 10,000 word short story. And not everyone wrote them that week. Like, the week was spent mostly planning the stories, and some people started writing, and some people got pretty close to being done. But then when everyone went home, they were responsible for getting their stories done and then getting them to Jay and I to edit. And other than that, you know, we hung out, we went to the World War II Museum, we went and had a lot of good food. You know, we did stuff as groups, people went out on their own, people paired up with other people in the group. It was just a week of writing, hanging out, and learning. And it was a blast.
Honestly, it sounds like something I would really want to do. How much did that cost?
I'd probably rather not say on this.
Okay.
I'm mainly saying that because the price is kind of, we're thinking about changing it right now.
Plus like mates rates, right?
What's that?
Do you have mates rates in America? Is that a thing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No. But if we dig in a bit deeper into that, so you had 8 people come onto the train or meet you in Chicago, and how did you manage expectations? Because I mean, I've thought a couple of times about just getting some people together and running short workshops in Lincoln itself, so not even going that far, just taking local people. But to have a couple of people come from, you know, across the Atlantic to come to these workshops, was that, how did you handle that in the way to be sure to meet their expectations and make sure that they had a good trip? Was that quite a lot of pressure on your shoulders?
You know, I think I felt a lot more pressure on that than Jay did, because Jay is a teacher. So Jay's background, he spent 25 years in education. So, you know, that's the job he quit in July. He was a high school teacher. So I think for him, it was a lot less, there was a lot less pressure with that. And in turn, it took some pressure off me because he is the one who handled planning everything. So, which just made sense because he's a teacher. So, so he handled all the lesson plans, and, you know, I was definitely involved and I helped teach and stuff, but it was, I was definitely a little nervous, and the expectations were, I mean, cause this was a pretty big task for us to take, especially when you think about the fact that we had just came up with the idea of sitting out, having a beer in New Orleans in March. And then between March and November, we sold the trip out and executed it and went on it. So it was only a few months that we used Plan It. So, you know, I didn't know how, I mean, there were different things that, there was a lot of stuff to think about. I mean, what you brought up, which is like, oh, are we going to teach them stuff they're going to learn? And also the other big thing was, you know, what if a couple of the collaborators don't get along? That was another big issue that we had to kind of work through, you know, and, Luckily, nothing came up too crazy with that. But that's definitely something that, that was risky. But you know, having Jay there and having someone who, as I said, is such a good teacher and, you know, is there to kind of help guide me really took a lot of the pressure off. And now that I've done it once, like, I mean, after seeing, you know, the great questions we got and hearing feedback from everybody and how much they took away from it and just how much they learned. Cause I think too, that, you know, I kind of take for granted, like, that a lot of the stuff that I know from just studying and listening to podcasts and studying marketing and stuff, that is a lot of stuff that, like, not necessarily every author knows, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But after doing it once, there's pretty much no, like, I'm not nervous about doing it again. So I'm really, I'm excited to go do it again, which, to kind of go back to your a question you'd kind of asked, Luke, was I think you were kind of asking if we were going to do the same trip every single time.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're doing this again in November of 2018. And we are doing the same trip again, mainly because the most interest we polled people and the most interest we got was a train trip to New Orleans. So we'd given some options to some other cities, but people really want to do New Orleans. And New Orleans is cool because it's not really an expensive city and it's really easy to walk around. It's not necessarily the safest city in the world, but I mean, if you know where you're going and you stay on the main roads and stuff, like it's really easy just to get a hotel and walk anywhere you want to go. So it's really convenient for that.
Yeah.
And it's also just got such a cool ambiance and cool history to write horror books.
Yeah.
So we are doing that again this year. But the next time we do it, we might do something different, if for anything, to make it fresh for Jay and I, especially me, because I used to live 2 hours from New Orleans and I've been there more times than I can count. So I would like to go somewhere new, you know, and experience somewhere else. I'd love to come to the UK, you know, but
yeah, we'll
see. You've always got a place to crash.
You could do like a Edinburgh to London sort of train travel. It's not as far. It's like 8 hours, but you know, yeah. London's cool. Yeah, no, that sounds really good, man. It sounds like something that I would personally really want to do. New Orleans especially is always one of those places I've always wanted to go to. So
it's amazing. It's an awesome city.
So. Yeah. Am I also sensing a theme here? Because am I right in thinking that Dawn, which is the first book in your Final Awakening series, was set in New Orleans?
It was. That's correct. Yeah.
Is that a bit of a theme? Was that inspired by that trip at all, or was that just a happy coincidence?
Well, it goes back to it's a city that I'm very familiar with. And like I said, cause I used to go there every couple of months when I lived a couple hours from there. And Jay loves New Orleans too. So that was kind of when writing our first book, that was a setting we were both really familiar with. So we thought that would be kind of a good place to start. And it just turned out that we also were down there twice this year. So we were able to do some research and stuff while we were down there. It's more just because of how familiar we were with it, but it turned out that, like I said, we were down there and able to do some location scouting and stuff while we were down there. So,
yeah, it sounds good, man. I mean, I'm really kind of, you know, impressed and sort of, it's amazing to see how far you've come like in the last couple of years. And I'm just excited to see, you know, where you'll go next and what you enjoy doing. And it's just really good to see, man. So just congratulations on all the good work there.
Thank you.
So just a few more questions, then we'll jump into the quick fire round. So if all of your work was burned away in a post-apocalyptic nuclear meltdown and you had time to save a single piece of work, which book would you save and why?
None of the ones I did with Jay. I'm just kidding. That's a really, really good question.
It's a defining question.
It is. In all seriousness, like, it's hard because I have books that aren't really, they're early books that aren't really written that well, but they mean a lot to me because they're my first writings and also because there's some very cathartic stuff in those books, and stuff that, you know, is very personal to me. But so I have that, and then also have the stuff that, you know, like Dawn, which has like been a really, really successful book that's helped sustain Jay and I, you know? So,
yeah.
If I had to say one, it would, honestly, it would probably be Dawn, just because, the partnership that Jay and I built has been so awesome. And that is like the very first work we did together and kind of the birth of that. So I would probably say Dawn if I had to pick one.
Yeah. So in this post-apocalyptic nuclear meltdown, you've given book one, but not, you know, book one, it doesn't have the book two or three. So to get to the end of the book.
I guess we could rewrite book two and three.
yeah.
So.
Just a random question. It's good to my head just now. What films or books did you enjoy from 2017? Are there any sort of standouts that to you thought were really good that you just like to give a quick shout out to?
So I'm going to kind of turn that question because 2017 was a weird year for me because I didn't really watch a bunch of movies, to be honest with you. And I kind of like the last few years, I haven't been really watching movies. I've been one of those people who's been watching more television shows. But further than that, the big thing I did in 2017 was a few years ago when I started doing my side hustles and I was working the full-time job and I was doing, you know, writing and stuff. Obviously, naturally, you have to cut things out, right? So like that you're doing so you can make time, especially when you get a kid involved. So the first thing that I'd cut out at those times was video games.
Yeah.
Well, this year was writing was my full-time job and not my escape anymore. And like my hobby, I needed to find something that I could get my mind off stuff. And I got really hardcore back into video games this year.
Yeah.
So I like, as far as movies, there really wasn't anything. TV shows, Stranger Things was awesome. Game of Thrones was great. Those would be the two the first kind of mind.
Yeah.
But really video games is where I spent most of my time other than reading. And so if I can turn that on you and give you a couple shout outs to great video games I've played.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
This was a really weird year because I played two of my top probably 3 to 5 video games of all time this year.
Okay, I'm excited.
Are you a gamer?
Well, I am to a degree. I tend to play more like indie, you know, smaller 2-hour narrative games nowadays.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I do a lot of indie stuff too. But as far as like the big games that really like had an impact on me this year, Horizon Zero Dawn was one of them. That was the first big game I played this year, and like that game has inspired me so much as a writer that I probably could write it off of my taxes. It's just a beautiful post-apocalyptic story, and just very well told, great gameplay, but a better story than I find in most movies these days, to be honest with you. And but the other one, which ended up being my favorite game of the year and definitely my favorite game I've played ever, was Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So
nice. Yep.
I picked up the Switch in August and have put way too many hours into that game, more than I want to admit. So
it's kind of amazing the amount of stuff you can do on that. I've not got it myself, but I have had it sounds like a teenager now, but I played it around a friend's house and just the amount of effort they put in to take one of the old sort of classic Zelda games and throw it into the new age is kind of impressive.
It is unbelievable. The amount of stuff you can do. And like I said, I put way too many hours in that game, I want to admit. And when I beat the game, it gives you a little percentage of how much you did of all the quests and everything you collected. And I was only at 24%.
Yeah.
And I mean, so it was ridiculous. But yeah, so that was just me kind of turning the question around on you. So
because games is a
good deal this year. So
well, I've heard some of the things about Horizon Zero Dawn as well.
I was
interested when I saw it, but I wasn't kind of like, there's a few other games, but I've seen other people play it and finish it and say the story is like unbelievable, like it's fantastic.
It really got the shaft because it came out, I don't know if you remember this, it came out the week before Breath of the Wild did.
Okay.
And they're very, very similar games. So I feel like it kind of got the shaft as far as like attention and like game, because I think it would have won Game of the Year if Breath of the Wild wouldn't have come out. But it's definitely a better story of Breath of the Wild than Breath of the Wild is. But it's overall like, I mean, the gameplay stuff is amazing. It's just not quite up to par with what they did with Zelda. So
yeah.
There's something to be said lately in the actual storytelling for games. In the last
it's amazing.
4 or 5 years, they've really, really stepped themselves up. I mean, I'm still a massive fan of The Last of Us, is one of my favorite.
Oh, ones. Yeah. Just, I can't wait for 2 to come out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to read to, into it from the trailer, because the trailer kind of seems to be taking a much darker direction, which I'm looking forward to, but we'll see what they do.
But you're right. I mean, I really, and I honestly think that, I mean, between the story and the music, I mean, all it's right up there with movies. I mean, some of those soundtracks are freaking amazing for some of those games. Horizon.
Especially for writing.
Yeah. I write that, I write to the Horizon Zero Dawn soundtrack pretty religiously when I'm writing post-apocalyptic stuff. So, that's definitely a goal of mine is in the next few years is, you know, Jay and I want to look into, possibly getting into writing games. And, you know, I have this vision of, I really want some really good indie studio to take Dawn or Final Awakening and make it into like a side scrolling 16-bit action platformer.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like, it would be,
that'd be amazing.
It would be so great. Like a game I played this year, The Mummy Demastered, which was based off that terrible Mummy movie that came out with Tom Cruise. But it's basically a Super Metroid clone, and it is amazing. And I played it, and I was like, oh my God, Final Awakening could totally be a game like this.
Yeah.
And I really, really want that, but we'll see. We're going to try to maybe start getting our feet wet with that, but we got to figure that out, I guess, before we do it, so...
That's exciting, man. I've got like one other question before we jump to the quickfire round. Dan, have you got any other questions you want to ask?
I'll hold back. You go.
I was just going to ask, so what advice would you give to a newer writer, a newer self-publisher that they should ignore? So what advice do they tend to get that they should, you know, throw away and not listen to?
That's really hard.
And nicked it off Tim Ferriss.
It's
in his like one of the questions he always asks people on his podcast. So that flummoxes everyone. I'm going to try that.
Because you're always told what you should take.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's what I think. I don't know if I necessarily have one piece of advice that I think people should ignore. But here's what I will say is I think that if you're a new author and you're hearing all these things like, you know, oh, you know, I have to be on Facebook or I have to have an author website and I have to do, you know, this and that. And I have to have audiobooks. I think that I really encourage you to stop and ask yourself why. Like, what is your why? Jay and I talk about this all the time, and it's in reference to, if you haven't seen this, go watch now the guy's name just went off the top of my head. I think it's Simon Sinek or something.
Start with why. Yeah.
TED. If you just go on YouTube and just type in Start With Why TED Talk, watch that.
Yeah.
Anything that Jay and I, whether we were starting the podcast, like questions with websites, everything, we always say, okay, well, what's our why? And I think if you can, you know, figure out what your why is instead of just understand like, oh, this person has all their books wide and not in KU and they're doing well, so I'm going to do that. Like, I think if you ask yourself like what you're trying to achieve and ask yourself why, what is the result you want to get out of it before you just go do things, I think that is really, really important, and that you can apply that to any advice you get, whether I think it's good advice or bad advice.
So
I hope that kind of answers your question, because I don't really have anything specific. I just think that a lot of authors just follow what other successful authors are doing without really asking why they're doing it. And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah. I like it. It's a good answer. Okay, Dan, have you got any questions before we go to the quick fire round?
I have 1,000, but I'm going to be respectful of Zach's time, so we'll shoot into quick fire. I'm sure I'll shoot you an email at some point, Zach.
I've been talking too much, so
no, okay. That's exactly why we got you on the show.
That's what we like.
Okay, Dan, do you want to go for the first question, or should I take it?
After you, mate.
Okay, Zach. Number one, what was the second to last book that you read?
The second to last?
Yeah.
Trackers by Nicholas Sainsbury Smith.
What's the difference between a shepherd's pie and a cottage pie?
No idea.
What's your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Oh, I'm actually drinking that right now. It is, I'm going to sound really posh here. It is a Samuel Smith organic chocolate stout.
Nice. Wow. Yeah, I've had that. Sam Smith. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. So.
What's your favorite US city?
New Orleans. Mm.
The first film you ever loved.
Back to the Future.
Who's the one person you'd want to meet?
Oh, Stephen King. We'll say Stephen King.
Do you believe in love after love?
Sorry, I heard Daniel laugh and that distracted me. Do I believe in
love?
It's okay.
Do you believe in love after love? After love.
In love after love?
Yeah, it's that song. Share.
Do you feel something inside yourself?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Why not?
I didn't read these questions in advance and that just got me. Who's your favorite creator who's not a writer?
My favorite creator who's not a writer? Ooh, that's a really good question. I don't know. We'll say whoever made Breath of the Wild. We'll say that. Nice. I can't remember the guy's name. I think it's. I don't remember. But yeah, we'll
John
say that.
Nintendo.
Yeah.
Number nine.
It's a Japanese.
He's a Japanese dude. What film makes you cry?
Oh, what film makes me cry? Forrest Gump.
Nice. And where can we follow you and your work?
ZachBohannon.com is the best place. And if you want to see what Jay and I are doing with our company, that's MoltenUniverseMedia.com. And then if the authors on a train stuff is interesting, and that sounds like something you'd be interested in, we have all the information on that on AuthorsOnATrain.com. And we have like a little sign up thing. If you want to get some more information, such as find out how much it costs, you can, it doesn't commit you to anything, but you can sign up and we'll get in touch with you. Cause we're currently taking applicants for that. And I can go ahead and tell you that we're almost half full already.
Wow. So nice.
Yeah.
Did you also, I know you've been talking a lot about is it the Sell More Books conference?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah. So, Jay and I, we're going to be speaking at the Sell More Book Show Summit. Which we are co-hosting with Jim Kukral and Brian Cohen of the Somewhere Book Show. And that is going to be in Chicago, Illinois, the first weekend of May. So we don't have a ton of tickets available for that. And I know hotels are starting to get kind of crazy there. So if you're interested in that, you can go to sellmorebookshow.com/summit. We'll be there. Lindsay Broker, Monica Leonel, Chris Fox, bunch of really good speakers are going to be there giving some good talks. So
cool.
Fantastic.
Okay, Matt. Well, just a quick thanks to Disaster Peace for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, our patrons over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because Matt, you'll be alone. Thanks, Dan.
You're very welcome.
And then just one more time, Zach, thanks, man, for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys. You guys are doing some really cool things. Like I said, Jay and I talk about you guys all the time. So we appreciate you having us on.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you
soon. Awesome.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.